podcast where we discuss the people, places, and events all around Kestrel Country. Joel, I like to start off with kind of just people's background, you know, we're get into how what got you to Moscow. It's a podcast about Moscow. But where'd you grow up? Kind of what brought you to Moscow? And then we can talk about some of what you're doing here now.
Okay. I'll talk. I'm sure you can edit out if it gets too lengthy. But, you know, I was born in Phoenix. And so I lived there until I was 11. That's where all of my mom's side of the family, which is most of my extended family, because my dad only has one sister. But even my dad's parents lived there. So I was born in Phoenix. I lived there till I was 11. I moved to the Seattle area. That's where I graduated from high school in that area, in the Bothell, Kirkland area. And then I wasted about a year and a half of my life after that. And then I joined the Marine Corps because I wasn't doing well at school. I mean, I almost didn't pass volleyball. And so I was like, this is probably not the right place for me.
And I've played volleyball. Like, you're not terrible.
Yeah.
So
thanks.
That seems
it was
difficult.
Mostly an attendance issue.
Gotcha. So you were in school though.
I did two trimesters at Shoreline Community College.
Okay.
I had tried to join the Marine Corps actually, like I think in my senior year, but I had flat feet. And I admitted to that cause I didn't know it would disqualify me, and they disqualified me. So I went back in like a year later and told them I did not have flat feet when they asked about it. And I guess they didn't notice when I went to the medical. They commented, they're like, your feet are kind of flat. And they signed off on it. So
did you have family in the military in the past? Was it something you kind of always wanted to do?
My grandparents were in World War II. I had a couple uncles by marriage. Well, one uncle by marriage and one that's sort of like a weird family connection. Anyway, they were in Vietnam. But no, not a lot. Again, most of my mom's side are sisters, you know, and then my dad has one sister. And he was not in the military himself, so not a ton. I think it was always something that was kind of interesting to me. It wasn't as though I grew up with my heart set on it, but it was always something that I thought might be interesting to do, the military in general. So I went in because I thought I actually might make a career out of it. I thought, like, I don't want to go to school, obviously. I'm not enjoying this. I don't want to do it. So I thought being in the military could be a good career. So anyway, I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. I was in Camp Pendleton in Southern California, and then, briefly deployed after 9/11, came back and basically got out right away. And then I moved back to Phoenix. My parents and my brother had all moved back to Phoenix from Seattle while I was in the Marine Corps. So basically everybody was there, but, I really didn't like Phoenix at all. As I lived there as an adult.
And you didn't like the Marine Corps? Like, did you figure out pretty quick that I was like, yeah, this is not the career for me?
I did, yeah. As an institution, I liked the Marine Corps, and there are some Marines that I liked, of course, but in general, the quality of the person and the I don't know what the right word is, but sort of I guess the honor that I thought would be there wasn't really there. It was just kind of skeezy a lot of times. And they talk a lot about leadership, but like a lot of the people that were leaders thought leadership meant screaming and cussing at you. You know, I was like, if you want me to take out the garbage, just ask me to take out the garbage. I'll take it out. You know, you don't have to berate me and cuss at me to get me to take out the garbage. If you ask me and I don't do it, okay. But we're not there yet, you know? So yeah. It was just that kind of a thing that by the time I got out, I was done. But if I look back, I could have probably made a career of it if I'd maybe pursued like an officer route or I just even had a different mindset myself. I got kind of disenfranchised and I had a bad attitude about it, you know, for the last 3 years I was in. So it could have been better. I made it sort of worse for myself than it needed to be because of my attitude. But yeah, I knew pretty quick I wasn't going to do more than 4 years. I did tell, you know, when you get close to getting out, somebody comes and talks to you about reenlisting. And I told this gunnery sergeant that I would stay in if they made me a colonel, and they didn't do it.
They said, yeah, they didn't.
So I was thinking I'd be on a real early track to general.
Did they think about it?
He thought about it long and hard.
Your life could have been very different.
Yeah. So, got out, moved back to Phoenix, and started going to college. And by that time, I was much more motivated to go to college. And that's when, and during that time is when I became a Christian, which was January of 2004. And I got out in August of 2002. And so I was looking to get out of Phoenix in general because I didn't like it. And I was looking to get into back to a place out of Seasons. And I was at that time looking for a place that had some kind of Christian community I could be a part of because, you know, I was going to church in Phoenix with my mom, but it was a giant church. And I didn't know anything about theology at the time, but it was Calvinist and sort of its theology, but it was a very modern church service, you know. The music was all very modern and all that. So I didn't know any of that. I just was there. And I was 25 and, you know, kind of too old for the youth group. I did the youth group, but there were, you know, 18 to 22, most of them. They were nice to me, but I didn't make any friends. Nobody invited me anywhere. So I didn't really have any community of a Christian community. And my aunt knew I was looking to move, and I was thinking about moving to the Santa Cruz area where my sister lives. And at the time, my aunt lived there too. This is the aunt that sort of led me to becoming a Christian I'm talking about here. She said, you should move to Moscow and, you know, think about going to New St. Andrews College. And I've never heard of either, right? Although after she heard I became a Christian, I got this package in the mail and I opened it, and it was Reforming Marriage by Doug Wilson. She had just sent that to me when she heard I became a Christian. So I read that. And again, I'd never heard of Doug Wilson or anything. So, but I mean, I read it and, you know, it's got all the Bible verses in it. I'm reading the Bible verses. I'm like, yeah, I mean, makes sense. So, she was, you know, aware of Moscow and Credenda Agenda and New St. Andrews, Doug Wilson. I guess that she had sent Brendan O'Donnell this direction way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, she said to, you know, I should move here. I'd probably like it. And so I just kind of picked up and moved. And yeah.
Yeah. You're so like, Idaho's got four seasons.
Yeah. And
yeah. But you didn't go to New St. Andrews College.
I did. Did
you?
No, I applied, I got in, but I didn't have any money to go there. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll work for a bit, save up some money. I was doing that. And then I thought, well, I'm kind of just working and sort of idle. I'll try and finish my degree because I got, why not? Right. So I ended up finishing my undergrad degree, and I don't know, never find my way to New St. Andrews. So
what were you studying? Your
undergrad? I was getting a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration with an emphasis in finance.
So was that kind of a post Marine Corps thing of like, were you always good at math? Were you attracted to entrepreneurship? Like, what made you go down that finance route?
I'm good at math. I'm good at algebraic math or not calculus. I did terrible in calculus because that to me seemed more like almost like a language. But you know, if it comes to just solving math, multiplication, arithmetic, and algebraic kind of stuff, I'm good at that. I've always known that. But basically when I was in Arizona going to community college, and by the way, you ask, did I start? No, I started while I was in the Marine Corps. And so I started doing correspondence classes with this college called Thomas Edison State College in New Jersey. And they kind of specialized in this, and they had a heavy military, student base, and they offered great pricing and all this stuff. So when I moved here, I continued it with them. But finance, because they made me choose something, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I frankly still don't. And so I just chose finance, right? It sounded like it could be interesting. Numbers and math are kind of a thing that I know is good at. So that's kind of how I landed on that, just because I had to choose something and I didn't know what else to choose.
Yeah. So you got your degree in finance, met your wife here.
Yep.
Yep.
Met her here in 2000. We met in 2006 and got married in 07.
It was a good year to get married.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes. You and I and Christine and Catherine spent a lot of time together.
That's true.
That summer of 06.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember that, but
I sure do.
Yeah. A lot of boating, a lot of soccer and tennis, neither of which I actually enjoy, but Christine was there.
But hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you got married in 07.
Uh-huh.
And what did you do right after that? You were doing accounting?
No. So I worked for Keith Daimler. And I was his loan processor.
But that was before. He is an accountant now. That's before, right. He was in accounting.
Yep.
Okay.
So because after I got out of the Marine Corps and lived in Phoenix, I worked for Wells Fargo as a loan processor for about a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. but I only did it for a year and then I quit. I had applied for a promotion at Wells Fargo and then they brought me in to interview me for that position. For, you know, like loan processor two or whatever it was, you know. But when they started the interview, I was like, look, I just quit. I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm like, all right. I've never had a job interview or promotion interview like that before, but.
You didn't ask to become colonel in order to stay or anything?
No. I didn't see that. They only gave me a 1% raise, and I was kind of unhappy about that. I think that played into my decision to leave. So anyway, point being, I had done some loan processing before. So I met Keith like my first 2 weeks here and he said he might be looking to hire a loan processor. And eventually he offered me the job. And so I did that for about 2 years, I think.
Okay. And that was like 2007, 2008.
Yeah. That was 05 to 07.
Okay. So yeah, right before the crash.
Yeah. So during that, I graduated with my degree in 07 and there's no real jobs here for a finance degree from some no-name college out of New Jersey, right? So you could sell insurance or be a personal banker. And I didn't want to do either of those. So I had taken an accounting class, basic accounting, while I was getting my finance degree. I thought it was kind of interesting. And so I decided, again, because I didn't know what else to do, but I needed to do something. It's like, I'll become a CPA, right? So went back to school for a master's in accounting. Then I started working for Christchurch as like their finance person. And I did that for about 3 years.
While you were getting your master's in accounting?
Mm-hmm. And that's when the recession happened. And it took me, I graduated in May of 09, but it took me until January of 11 to get a job for an accounting firm. And that was Moss Adams over in Eugene. And yes, during that time, Keith had gone back to school and got his master's degree in accounting and got a job at Moss Adams up in Spokane. Then we moved to Eugene and was there for almost 3 years and came back.
Yeah, and Moss Adams is a big firm, right?
Yeah, a big West Coast firm.
Okay.
One of the larger West Coast. They're certainly not one of the big four, but they're a pretty big firm, yeah.
And you were doing audits and that kind of stuff? And you got your CPA while working for them, or did you have your CPA before?
I passed all the exams on my own while I was waiting to get a job again, because I was just like, I'll do something. I don't want to be idle.
Yeah.
So, and I thought it would make me, you know, more desirable hire. So anyway, I did all the exams, but you can't actually get your license until you work in the field for a certain amount of time.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't get it until I'd been at Moss Adams for 2 years.
Okay. What's that? I mean, it's kind of off track, but what's that like now? So, I mean, at that time, it took you a couple of years just to find a job in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that's like now? I mean, is there a shortage there? Like there is a lot of other places.
I'm told that there is.
Okay.
I may be looking for an accounting job soon.
Okay.
You know, I have a very large debt I got to pay off. But I gotta get my CPA license active again. So I have to do a lot of continuing professional education. But yeah, I mean, I'm told that there's a demand for accountants, just probably like there's a demand for everything. I think it was a thing that a lot of baby boomers were probably did more than you're going to find in Gen Z or even millennials.
That makes sense. So, everybody wants to do computer science and that kind of thing now.
So a lot of those people obviously have left the workforce.
Yeah. It seems similar to attorneys. Like I know in that same kind of post recession, during the recession timeframe, it was like there were law school graduates everywhere, you know, working whatever job because there just weren't any law jobs.
Right.
And now it sounds like it's swung a little bit the other way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's interesting. So yeah, you worked in Eugene and then came back here. But when did you get into kind of entrepreneurism? That's the right word.
Yeah. Well, I guess while I was in Eugene, I made friends with a couple of brothers who wanted to start a brewery. So they asked if I would help them sort of be the accountant finance person in that. And so I agreed to do that, helped them get their brewery up and running. And that's Cold Fire Brewery out of Eugene. So that was kind of my first major step into entrepreneurship. I sold newspaper subscriptions door to door when I was a kid. I don't know if that counts. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. That probably was a window into your future.
Right.
Yeah.
And often all I got was pizza afterwards because nobody ever bought any. But the guy did buy his pizza afterwards.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you're a teenager, working for pizza is not a bad thing.
No.
Yeah. So other than that, though, it was your first foray into it.
Yeah.
And was that something you always had interest in, or was it like, hey, just more of an opportunity? These guys came to you, you're like, oh man, this would be interesting.
Yeah, it was more of an opportunity. They came to me and asked if I'd do it. And
is that still going?
It's still going, yeah. They're doing really well. We've expanded. We've opened a second brewing location. And we got, you know, we've tripled our production capacity. We have a restaurant being built. We've won several medals at Great American Beer Festival and World Beer Cup. So we're doing pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we just signed with a distributor. And so there's a chance in the not too distant future they might be getting their beer out here.
Wow, that's awesome. And that was how long ago? When did you?
We opened in January of 2016.
Okay. And so Tapped is probably what you're most known for around here. Mm-hmm. Was that when you started thinking about, or was that kind of what planted the seed, thinking about doing something similar here in Moscow? It's not similar. You're not brewing beer, but.
No, the idea for, well, your idea originally came to me when I first moved here. Now, it wasn't necessarily Tapped, but when I moved here, I realized or noticed that there, if you're talking about restaurants at that casual mid price point, you know, not like higher end restaurants, but at that mid price point, casual dining, everything seemed to be catered to college students. If you can remember back to 2005, what was available here, you mean there was Applebee's. I don't even know if Applebee's was here yet, but
I think it was.
Yeah.
In 2005.
It might have been.
Applebee's, Wingers.
So some chains like that, but
there wasn't, I mean, to be honest, at that time, there wasn't much, period. Like, even on the higher end, it was like the Red Door downtown was about the only thing other than, out at the university. Uh-huh. There just wasn't much here.
Yeah.
Pizza joints.
But. Right. And so, you know, even like the Ale House.
That's right. Ale House was there. That probably opened around that time.
Ale House?
Yeah.
No, I think Ale House has been around since like the 80s.
Really?
I think so. People have.
They old, weren't. I don't think they were in that location. Maybe
people older than me have said, "Oh, you know, I come back here and when my kids are at college to visit them, and we go to the Ale House because I went there when I was in college."
Okay.
So I don't remember all that was here, but there wasn't as a place that seemed to cater to, you know, post college adults. You know, and at the time I didn't necessarily have a concept, but I just thought this is weird. You know, everywhere else I've lived, there's plenty of places like that aren't just college kind of dives, you know. I'm not trying to bag on any place, but there wasn't a place that I thought was whose target market was postgraduate, you know, adults, post-college adults. So it was something I noticed when I first moved here.
Okay.
And I thought, man, if somebody could open a business like that, they'd probably do really well. And obviously I was not in a position to do anything like that. But after coming back here and so I moved back from Los Angeles and I was working for a company in Pullman. as like the head of their accounting department, and kind of realized I realized at that time I don't think I want to do accounting for the rest of my life, and was trying to figure out what else I would want to do. Thought, hey, I'm young enough now that if I go out there and try something else and I fail, I have enough time to, you know, put things back together.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of talking about a lot of what we've just talked about with a friend, and so I was kind of telling him about my idea. So when I come back from Eugene, I still noticed there wasn't a place, like I had mentioned, to cater to post-college adults. But my idea then had taken more shape from the craft beer circle I'd kind of stepped into in Eugene, working, in Portland and Eugene a lot. At that time, particularly, it was a big craft beer boom. So I'd sell tap houses. It was a big thing. And so I had sort of a concept I thought might translate well here in terms of a tap house. So, yeah, coming back from Eugene is kind of where I kind of and working in Portland and stuff is where I put the concept together in my head. Not that I had come back with the concept, but when I started thinking about possibly doing it, that was the concept I thought of.
Gotcha.
So a friend of mine was like, "Yeah, let's do it." You know, I was like, "All right, I guess."
You know? Was that in Eugene? Was it most? I think when I went down there and visited you guys, we went to Ninkasi. Uh-huh. You know, were a lot of them more specific breweries? Or were there similar things to Tapped where you have a whole bunch of different beers and
there's
some of both?
Yeah, there's definitely both. In fact, my original concept for Tapped was actually even more casual.
Okay.
It was more of a concept that you could see quite a bit in Eugene in Portland. At least you did, 10, 12 years ago when I was there. But you didn't have a waiter, really. I mean, there was a couple waiters that would occasionally wander around, bus a table. If you wanted something, you could ask them. But if you wanted, like, service right now, you'd go up to the bar and get something.
Okay.
That was kind of my original idea. And we actually opened trying to implement that model originally at Tapped, but it didn't. People here did not accept that.
People want service.
Yeah. And so there's a culture that has to embrace that. And
yeah.
Eugene has that culture. It's like, it's not an uncommon thing. It's
accepted. Interesting.
Here it was like, what's going on? This is not how we do things. This is crazy. Right. So I had to shift, meet the market where it's at and give them what was going to keep them coming back. So we had to scramble and kind of change the concept and, really look at a full service restaurant.
So you start a restaurant with no real culinary experience, no real restaurant experience.
None. I've never worked in a restaurant in my life,
but you have business knowledge and experience.
I didn't at the time.
Finance anyway.
Yeah. I have accounting and I've audited plenty of businesses, but I mean, there's a certain level of business is fairly simple, right? You need to sell the thing you make and make more than you spend,
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just interesting to me. It seems like a lot of people are the opposite, the other way around, right? They're a chef or whatever. They're really into food and cooking, and I'm not saying you're not, but
– I'm not.
You know.
You're right.
But then – how do you actually make that into a business? Same goes even with construction. You see a lot of guys, they're really skilled carpenters. Like, great, I'm going to go start a business. I don't want to work for this other guy. A lot of times it doesn't work out
because
they're good at construction. They're not necessarily good at running a business.
That's right.
So it's just interesting that coming at it in a different way. So how did you put together the, I guess, product side of it, for lack of a better word, the food side of it, not having experience, not being in the food business?
Yeah, I thought that, again, just the basic idea of, controlling your costs and your labor and the cost of the goods sold and all that, that's applicable to any manufacturing, in quotes, manufacturing business, right? Which is what a restaurant is like a just-in-time manufacturing business, right? And so that's one thing that's sort of just – it just is what it is. Now – I don't know anything about food. I don't even really like food. I mean, if I didn't have to eat, I probably wouldn't. I could just take a pill to get all my nutrients. I would do that.
Yeah.
So
not a good tagline for a restaurant, by the way, but
well, I figured I would just hire people who knew that kind of stuff. And so that was what we did originally. And so, you know, the people that I hired, I worked with them and give them my 2 cents on things, but they basically put the menu together. And then as we went along, we tweaked it. Okay, people aren't ordering this. They must not like it. Let's put something else on, right? It was just a lot of fixing the original guesses we'd made. Or, you know, hey, this product, people like it and all that, but we don't make very much money on it. And so we're losing money when we sell it, kind of a thing. So we have to replace it with something, or we have to change it, you know. So not being a food person has helped me because I don't have any sort of attachment to anything on the menu.
Mm, yeah.
You know, either it's a thing that people like to buy and we can sell it at the right margin in order to run a successful business, or it's not. So if not selling, well, people don't like it, get rid of it, right? Put something on that people like, right? I don't care. It wasn't my creation. I'm not married to it. Mm. If it's, the cost of goods sold is too high, no problem saying, well, you're going to have to, if you want to continue selling this, we need to change what we put into it. And that was another thing that, you know, I realized learned in the restaurant industry is whenever you make a dish, you're always going to compromise on some things. It's never going to be the ideal way you would make it. If I invited you over for dinner, then I was going to make you dinner. Maybe at the highest end restaurants, you can do that, but certainly not in casual dining. So, not really caring about food the way that I do, it was easy for me to sort of approach it that way and sort of insist on that when other people are like, no, this is how it tastes the best. And it's like, I get that. But, and again, just go with the idea that, you know, Tapped wasn't created to sell the best food in Moscow, right? That's not what we do. I don't charge enough for that. You want the best food, you're going to pay for it. And another thing I learned in the restaurant industry is the quality of the foods you put out there is directly related to how much it costs to buy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number one driving factor in how good is this product. Well, how much did it cost to buy? You know, you want a really good steak, you know, it's pretty much going to be because it costs $40 a pound to buy. You know, you can mess it up cooking it, but, you know, that's always going to be better than the, you know, $6 per pound steak that somebody else went by.
Yeah.
Just unless you ruin it cooking it. So those were some interesting things that I learned pretty early on in terms of running the restaurant. So,
yeah. So what year did it start?
15.
Okay. Yeah. Almost 10 years.
Yep.
Wow. So that brings up there. I don't know what the statistic is, but you always hear it out there, right? That like most restaurants fail within mm-hmm. 2 years, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yep.
So how did you get past that? And was it close? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, was the first 2 years as bad as other people experience or?
Probably not. Probably wasn't as bad because we didn't fail. So we had a profit the first year. It wasn't a ton of money or anything, but
that's outstanding.
Yeah. I mean, I think having the church community here was a huge, lifeline, right? Originally. And that's something what we didn't have that in Lewiston, but it's hard to know how much that affects your business until you maybe have something to compare it to. But, I think a lot of restaurants fail in the first 2 years, one because of their location, which could have been a thing for us in Lewiston too. And the other one is kind of what you mentioned earlier. You have somebody who likes to cook, and so they want to do a restaurant. But liking to cook and actually even being a good cook is different than making food in a restaurant. You know, it's just two totally different things. So it doesn't matter if you like to cook or even if you make really good food. You have to make it for a profit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You have to make a lot of it at once. And so you're not handcrafting everybody's, you know, dish.
So you mentioned location being one of the big reasons people go out of business. How much of is that in a factor for you guys? Were you super picky in finding that location.
Here in Moscow or down in Lewiston?
In Moscow.
I was.
Yeah.
I
really and what went into that decision? Because, I mean, I'll be honest, it seemed like at that time, from what I remember, most of the restaurant scene was further south.
Yep.
On Main Street. Yeah, Main Street.
I definitely wanted to be on Main Street. That was something that me and Caleb Applegate, who was working with me and partnered with me and helping me get this place going, that was the thing that we really were pretty set on. Now being, north of 3rd Street, you're right. There
was probably a little bit of a gamble at the time.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people tell me it was a mistake, you know? There wasn't anything available south of 3rd Street, right? I mean, we'd looked for months and months. There just wasn't anything. And that place that we're in now, I don't know if you remember, but it was empty for a long time. It was hideous, internally and from the outside. It was, I think, like the Latah County Democrats had been the last temporary tenant in that place. It wasn't until I don't know why, but I just thought, you know, if we just gutted this thing and ripped off the front, it could look totally different. It could be whatever we want it to be. And this just dawned on me one day I was walking by. So that was how I just thought, let's go for it.
So your main location decision was downtown.
Yes.
Just being on Main Street.
Main Street. I would not have wanted to go further north than probably Mingles. You know, what is that, First Street?
Mm-hmm.
But that Main Street between 6th and 1st was really the area we were located.
Okay. Yeah. And what was the reason for that? Just did you guys look into foot traffic, did a lot of studies on it, or was it just, you know, more gut instinct? Like, I think a restaurant needs to be downtown.
It was mostly gut instinct. I mean, not that it takes a whole lot of intuition to realize that downtown Moscow is sort of the heart of the dining scene, but also just the heart of our city. And again, going to Lewiston, it's not like that in Lewiston. Their downtown isn't the heart of their city. It's not even in the heart of their city. You know, it's in the northwest corner of their city. And it certainly is not the place that people just go to. So, but obviously that's how it is in Moscow. That's, you know, all the successful restaurants were on Main Street at the time. So, yeah, I mean, that was fairly self-evident. I didn't do any studies or anything like that.
Did you have any like super hard lessons? I mean, we haven't really talked much about Lewiston yet, but hard lessons those first few years that you guys had to learn, that, you know, big hiccups, anything like that? Seemed like you were going through a fair number of, I don't know if chefs, you know, or, you know, the people in charge of cooking and menu and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Did it take a while to kind of find the right fit there? Or
yeah, it wasn't until Tyler really wanted to try it, and I'd been reluctant to, since he had never worked in a restaurant either, to allow, you know, say like, yeah, you can run the whole thing.
He had been working there previously.
Yeah, he started as a front of house manager.
Okay,
and he had been at Bootser's and a teacher before that. So, but he wanted to do it. He asked me, and I'd not had success finding the person I wanted prior to that. And I thought, well, you know, why not? One, he'd been almost 2 years by now. So he has almost 2 years of experience. I've got a lot more restaurant experience by this time too, working to figure out, it's not just the cost of goods sold. It's how do we make the kitchen run efficiently so that when we get busy, we can get food out quickly. And that was a real challenge up front. And a lot of that has to do with the way your menu is set up. So that if 80% of your orders are all have to be cooked on the flat top, and our flat top is, you know, only so big, I can only cook so much on it. If I have to service 80% of the restaurant with that, yeah, I'm going to fall behind.
Interesting.
Right. So you have to get menu items on there that utilize the entire hotline pretty evenly. so, you know, we have 4 hamburgers, and that's pretty much all we cook on the flat top. But the flat top probably services 50% of what we actually sell. So the menu isn't 50% flat top items, you know, griddle items. It's, you know, 10%, but it does make up 50% of our sales, roughly. Just kind of making up round numbers here. But
yeah,
point being that, it has to be, you have to set it up so that it, everything is utilized fairly evenly so that you can make the most food you possibly can at any one time.
And a lot of that was trial and error?
A lot of it was trial and error, but also sort of coming to that realization along the way, right? It didn't dawn on any, at least on me and on Tyler until a little while in, like, this is a problem. We're falling behind because that station there has to cook everybody's food.
You find the bottleneck.
And it's, you know, it's only so big. We only got a 4-foot, you know, griddle. So there's that component, which was an interesting thing to learn. Again, what kind of procedures you have to make the food be able to be actually hot and on a plate as quick as possible. What can we prep ahead of time? All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's like a logistics experiment, or it's a logistics job, a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so then when did – we can talk about Lewiston a little bit. So how early did you decide, like, you know, this is going well. What if we did it again? What if we found another spot?
It was probably about 3 years in. It was probably 2019. Yeah, maybe 18, actually. It could have been in 18. Yes, it was 18. That would be 3 years from 2015. I'm good at math. So
yeah, that's good.
We we started looking in 18, and we actually started, we made our first step towards Lewiston in 2018 by attempting to lease a spot down there, and the current spot we ended up putting it in.
Okay.
We ended up buying that building a year later and then putting it in after that. So
your thought was, yeah, things are going well. We've kind of figured out how things are running up here. And Tyler was already there at the time or no?
Yeah, Tyler was at tap from day one. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And running things at that point.
At that point, yeah.
3 years in. And just thought, well, why not multiply this thing?
Yeah. And we had looked in several places. We considered Pullman. We considered Coeur d'Alene. In fact, we'd pursued an opportunity in Coeur d'Alene that just didn't work out. But Lewiston is pretty close. So we thought that would be, but far enough away that we wouldn't just be pulling our own customers. Like,
was Pullman, that kind of the Pullman decision? Do you guys know where, like, do you track that information? Is that through either credit cards or anything like that to figure out where your customers are coming from? Or was it more just anecdotal?
Yeah, it's pretty anecdotal, but it's also, it's not that hard to sort of get a feel for it, right?
When there's a big Wazoo weekend, you guys are busy, example.
More busy than U of I weekends.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, and frankly, I don't love business in Washington. The minimum wage laws are punitive. And so staying in Idaho was desirable for us. But yeah, we also had, again, this is all anecdotal, but lots of Lewiston people over the years who's, you know, you do so well in Lewiston and all this stuff. And of course there's the other side of everybody's like, man, Lewiston is just too blue collar. They don't care about any of this. You hear a lot of both.
You don't really feel like tapped as uppity though.
No, I don't. But there, you know, people say all they want is their Bud Light or their Coors Light. And a spittoon, you know, I heard like that kind of caricature a lot. And it's like, how many are like that and how many would like tap? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know how to get that information. But we just decided it. We had, again, it's not uppity. It's just pub food, you know, and beer. So we thought even if you liked, just domestics, we have light beers. You know, we can carry more down there if that's what people want. But, you know, if we're saying, well, yeah, but we sell good food. You like good food, right? I mean, if you like Coors Light, you might still like a nice hamburger. That's not frozen. So anyway, those are sort of I guess we thought it was pretty universal fit.
Yeah. So it took, I mean, from starting down there 2018 timeframe to when did you open?
We opened in 2023.
Okay. So yeah, that's a long haul.
Yeah.
And that was mostly construction related delays and that kind of thing.
Well, no, we ended up buying the building about exactly a year after we signed our first lease to rent that spot, even though we never actually got into it in 18. So we bought it in 19, and then we were working with the bank and they said, hey, your loan to renovate the space is ready to sign on Friday. And so Friday came and went, and on Monday I contacted the bank and said, hey, so we didn't sign on Friday. Are we going to sign today, tomorrow? You know, what's the plan? The bank manager, he called us in, and this is, we'd been working with the bank for probably 5 or 6 months at this point to get this loan done. So it's early 2020 now. And he's like, hey, so your loan was declined like 3 months ago. And I was like, what? You know, so-and-so said we were going to sign 2 days ago. What do you mean it was, what? You know, and he's like, he was trying to, you know, had to be careful about how he was saying all this. He's like, I'm sorry. You know, I don't know how to tell you what happened, but I think this guy just didn't want to tell us we were declined. I don't know. I mean, he went so far as to say we were going to close, not just string us along. Like, you have a closing date.
That's crazy.
It's like, surely your cover up will, you know, blow up at that point. Right. I don't know. So it was weird. But anyway, and then the bank didn't want to actually do a restaurant loan at that time. You know, COVID had just started and they were, you know, just pulling everything back. So we had to go find a whole new bank, do a whole new loan process. And that took another 10 months, 11 months. So we're a year and a half after we bought this building before we have a loan to go and renovate it. And then, just for cost reasons, we had to basically self-perform as a general contractor. I mean, I tried to hire construction individuals to run the job. I wasn't trying to run it myself. But again, didn't have great success at finding great project managers. Went through a few, kind of finished it off myself. It took a while, and you know, it was very expensive because all the things went crazy during the year right when we started.
Yeah, no kidding. All that inflation. Yeah, I mean, that had to have been, you guys, from what it seems like anyway, you guys probably got hit by inflation almost worse than anybody else, right? Because you're doing a construction project, which mm-hmm. was insane inflation, mm-hmm. and cost of food, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Inputs went through the roof from what we could hear.
Yep.
A lot of hurdles, but you finally got opened. And and you guys just recently closed.
Yep.
So what happened there was you mentioned location. Mm-hmm. You think that was one of the biggest factors? Just being downtown, but like you said, Lewiston downtown is different.
It is. Their downtown, it could be really nice if the people cared enough to, you know, prioritize it. And there are some people down there that do, but they're a minority. The majority of people just don't seem to care.
You know what's interesting? I'll give you like just a little anecdotal. So I went down there for lunch. I don't know when that was. Late last year sometime. And it's funny because everyone in Moscow loves to talk about parking problems, mm-hmm. right? Like parking downtown is a nightmare, right? Like I've never really had a hard time.
I haven't either.
Like maybe I got to circle the block
right.
once or twice or whatever, you know, or you park a block or two away from Tapped and you walk in or whatever.
Yeah.
For using Tapped as an example. I actually found parking for Lewiston Tapped quite difficult. And I think some of it is because of downtown the way it is. It's much bigger,
uh-huh.
right? And so it was like I couldn't just circle the block quick. It's like I had to go all the way down the one way, come back around. I eventually parked like back behind, thought I could cut through, ended up walking. Like so it did seem like parking was a little bit more of an issue downtown Lewiston.
So Lewiston has a huge parking lot, public parking lot that's basically, you know, you cross the street, you go to the park. And then you cross another street, and there's a giant parking lot for like 1,200 cars. Like, I don't know. There's a ton. But nobody will park there and walk across the block, which is closer than just going down there, down the street and parking, and easier. And I mentioned to the city, you know, hey, you should put up like a giant light lit up free public parking sign, you know, because – so I don't think there actually is a parking problem in downtown Moscow. I mean, sorry, downtown Lewiston or Moscow for that reason.
Yeah.
For that matter. But it's there's the perception that there is, and that's all it takes to make people not go down there.
Well, it seems like some of it's like a flow issue, right? Yeah. Like,
and that's
so when I was trying to get there, I didn't really, you know, I was like, I'd have to go. I would have gone the other way, but I didn't really know to go the other way or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That stretch you're talking about, it's a long stretch where you can't turn around. And that's a bummer. That is probably the least desirable aspect of trying to park downtown. If you can't find something right there, you do have to go. It's not that far. It's a quarter mile. No, it's less than a quarter mile. It's probably 250 yards, right? But it feels like a long ways before you can turn around. And Moscow is nice because, you know, every 200 feet you can turn around. So there's a perception, at least, of parking problems downtown in Lewiston. For sure, that plays a role. I knew, of course, it wasn't the center of their town like it is in Moscow. Downtown wasn't like the focal point of Lewiston. But the thing about Lewiston is they don't have a place like that. So if you're going to go out to eat in Lewiston, you're going to get in your car and you're going to drive to a spot and you're going to go park and go to that place. It isn't, it's just, they're all over.
They don't have a center mass of a bunch of restaurants all downtown or whatever. Yeah. And there might be more up Thane, but like, still, it's individual parking lot, individual place. Yeah.
Yeah. And so our thinking was, well, if you're going to get in your car and drive to a restaurant, you could just as easily get in your car and drive to Tapped.
Yeah.
You're going to get in your car and drive somewhere. So that was the way, that's how I would think about it if I live there. So, and I just think, well, I'm a fairly regular guy, so probably a lot of people think like me. But there is that perception of the parking that, whether it's true or not, the perception does keep people from going downtown. So yeah, that plays a role. And we were also wanting to be sort of on part of a movement to revitalize their downtown. And there was a big movement to do that, particularly 4 or 5 years ago, and it kind of fizzled. Mm. And it's almost taken a step back. I don't know. No, probably not a step back, but it hasn't really gone anywhere. One of the guy that owns a lot of buildings downtown, he's not done a lot of construction because the construction prices are unreasonable.
Hmm.
Well, so he's just like, I'm not going to do anything until the construction prices aren't stupid.
Yeah.
So he's done very, very little. He owns a lot of stuff, but he's just kind of sitting on it.
Is that Alexander?
Yeah.
That the guy's name? Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
So
you had, how long were you open down there?
We were open for 8 months.
Okay.
And yeah.
Is there any feeling of maybe we didn't give it long enough?
Yeah, totally. I think if we could have made it for a couple of years, we could have become an established part of the restaurant scene in Lewiston. But it was just losing so much money, and I was the only one putting money in. I was like, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I can't. I don't want to, and I can't.
Yeah. Hey, how much of that do you think was geographic, not say Lewiston in particular, but just being 30 minutes, 35, 40 minutes? I don't know. What was the drive down there? 35 minutes or something?
Yeah, 35.
Away. Does that take a toll in terms of would you have – you think if you were there and could be around it all the time, mm-hmm. That'd be different or
– Yeah, it would be – it would have been easier on Tyler for sure. So, yes, that doesn't affect our sales necessarily. It might affect, not directly, I should say, it wouldn't directly affect our sales, but it could affect things like, is management there to ensure quality of service and, create the kind of internal culture that is nice to have, like that we have at Tapped here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of servers that come from other restaurants, and they tell us, all the time I hear this, like this place is very different than any other restaurant I've worked in, so much better, these other places they're all backbiting and they're catty and drama and all this stuff and no teamwork and just looking out for me. And they find working at Tap very different. And that's just like, that's a cultural thing that has been created over time. So a lot of that has to do with some of the people we've hired, right? We, from Tyler as the manager, to the individuals, a lot of high character, NSA Christian people, which again the kind of employee pool down in Lewiston was very different. So it was not nearly as easy to create that kind of a culture down there.
Mm.
But. Anyway, being a distance, not having the manager there as much can lead into those things, which can indirectly affect sales, right? If somebody's not getting the guest experience they want.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Do you think you'd do it again in another place? Or is it like, you know what? I think we've got a great thing going at Moscow Tapped and it's good being in Moscow.
I would consider it. I probably would be the one to push it in terms of I wouldn't spearhead it. But if somebody was like, Joel, I've run this restaurant over here with high success. I really would think this, Tapped would do well at such and such place. I'll partner with you. I'll run it. I can invest this much money. I'd consider something like that, but I'm not at this point in my life looking to push another one somewhere. I think one up in Coeur d'Alene would probably do well. I just not in position to do it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And circling back to where we started, I'm not a restaurant lover. If I go out to eat, I don't really care what my service is like. Unless you call me names, I don't care. I'm just like, I don't have the standard that I go out looking for. I'm just there to have fun with whoever I'm with, And so again, unless my food is pretty abysmal, I don't care,
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So what else are you up to? What's next? You mentioned accounting, maybe doing some of that.
Yeah. Well, I've got this building downtown that I'm trying to get built. And a lot of that will depend on the construction costs. But I've been negotiating with my neighbor about this shared wall that we have for a long time. I've got my permitted now to do the work that their engineer has agreed to, the work that my engineer has provided. So in hindsight, I would have just said to my neighbor, you get an engineer and you draw up what you want me to build to reinforce this wall, because it was me drawing stuff, my engineer drawing stuff, sending it over like guess and check. Do you like that? No. It's like this. Well, change that. Okay. What about now? We'll change that. It's like, why don't you just draw it? And then we'll just accept it unless it's crazy. Right. So in hindsight, it probably would have been better if we'd done that. But, anyway, I'm trying to get that building built.
Yeah. What's the plan for that building?
So that'll be a 4-story building. That's the plan. And the ground floor will be commercial and the top 3 stories will be apartments. And I'm going to Airbnb the second floor apartments and see how that goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this kind of your first foray into residential? Well, you got that building you own in Lewiston has some residential.
Yep.
Yeah.
It has. And I've owned some individual single family units in the past. But this will be the biggest, commercial project that I've done for sure. So, I got that going and recently with your dad acquired those industrial properties south of town. I'm hoping to, get more of those from the Fountains if they want to sell them. But I'm not sure. I've been thinking a lot about with this Tapped failing, what do I want to do? For work, for the vocation for the next, however long I got.
Yeah. Is that a midlife crisis?
Yeah. You see my Corvette though. It's pretty sick.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Anything, any stuff, at any new things at Tapped or things people should be looking out for? Yeah. Still doing Tap takeovers and trivia nights and all that.
All that. No, nothing new. Just, we've got new specials every week, of course. That's part of our thing.
Yeah, Instagram. Keep up the Instagram. Because I love looking, checking to see what the rotating burger is, Good. And I get all excited about
it. Has Instagram, game improved in your eyes in the last few months?
I would say I have not noticed anything.
Okay.
No.
All right. I don't know how much you're on social media.
I don't know if that's helpful or not. Like I said, I mostly just kind of look for the rotator of the week and check that out.
Okay.
Gets me excited.
New for us, we brought in a social media marketing person and she's done a lot of stuff, pushing a lot more content, doing more than just kind of the pictures. She's putting, reels and stories. I think are the things that she's doing. Unless those are the same thing. I don't know. But anyway, a lot of content and different kinds of content that we've been pushing out there. So that's something that we've done that's new, you know, behind the scenes. And it, you know, I can see that we're getting a lot more traction on the social media following and interactions and impressions and followings and likes and all that, all those terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like you said, you're a numbers guy.
So yeah.
You have to, you know, I'm sure it takes time to see if that translates.
It does. And we had, we'd started that for Lewiston and we had a massive spike in the amount of social media online interaction we were getting. How do you measure how that translates into people coming in? It's hard. So one of the things we put in place here is you're gonna market this item. Let's see if the spike, you know, the sales spike on that item.
Oh, there you go.
That would be a good indication that that what you're doing is having an effect, and for the most part, it does. Like we've seen that.
Hmm.
So now, does that mean more people are coming in, or is it just changing people's patterns of what they happen to order when they already come in? Like I don't know, but.
Yeah, just push those high margin items, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, I think we're like at an hour already. So.
Oh wow, okay.
Thanks Joel.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me. Tapped Moscow and also be excited to watch hopefully that building come down and then go up.
Yeah.
Right.
If you need some brick, you know, let me know. Or some old.
You have a lot of brick.
Really nice pine wood. Yeah. I mean, that whole brick structure has left, it's all getting knocked down. I didn't give away as much as I would have hoped last time, but I'd love to not have to throw it away. Just give it to people to use.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Local brick, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
With 130-year, you know, history in Moscow. So.
Yeah.
It is kind of cool. Anyway, you can have it for free if you want it. Just let me know.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Like, share, subscribe. We'll see you next week.